adjective in Hebrew. So Hanukkah Sameach. You can run around and tell everybody, tell all your friends that for at least the next 6 days or so. I want to do a brief explanation of the Hanukkah story to remind us of some of what actually happened in that history, how it relates actually to Messiah, and then I want to go and express some details about Hanukkah from a different place in the New Covenant Scriptures, the book of Hebrews, that I believe is talking about Hanukkah, and we'll explore some of that together. So first, the story of Hanukkah comes from right at about 200 years before the death of Yeshua, in the year, about the year 167 BCE. The story had begun by there was some rival families, rival feuds going on within our Jewish people at that time. Some wanted to be in their faith, in their worship, in their expression. They wanted to be bold. They wanted to go boldly in places where no one has ever gone before. Which, by the way, one of the members of Star Trek was Jewish. What? Yes, Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock. You know, what was his sign that he would do? You know, Spock from, yes. Did you know that is a Jewish symbol? It's not Vulcan, you know. That little shape there does not mean Vulcan, but it was a Jewish symbol. He just, you know, brought it in and yeah, that's it. That really wasn't part of my teaching. But there was a group of Jews that wanted to cast off their Jewish lifestyle. They wanted in that way to be religious pluralist. They wanted to, you know, forget about the old-fashioned stuff, you know. Why do these things? We want to look more like our next-door neighbors, and we want to act like our next-door neighbors, and we want to live like our next-door neighbors. And so there was a movement to begin to do things like not observe the Sabbath, to stop circumcising our baby boys, and stop raising our children in the traditions that God had prescribed. And then there were others that didn't want to do this, and of course they were at loggerheads with each other. And then something painful happened. There was an outside ruler. He was the king of the Seleucids, or the Syrians. Not Syria, modern-day Syria, but one of the generals who had descended from Alexander the Great. Maybe about 150 years after Alexander the Great had died, there was a general who came to town, to Jerusalem, and brought with him not only a wave of Greek reform, but he kind of made what had been going on in Jewish culture, he just upped the fire. He just upped the heat. He did things like set up a statue of Zeus on the altar in the temple. Zeus, the Greek god, in the temple in Jerusalem. Did you know that the Romans later actually called Jews atheists? The Romans thought that Jews were atheists. Why? Because in the Jewish temple, there were no statues of their god. They thought, well, the Jews don't have a god. There's no statue in their temple. And so here comes this Seleucid Syrian general. His name was Antiochus the Epiphanes the Fourth. How they ever got past the first with a name like that, I don't know. But he came along and he thought, you know, I think this temple needs a statue. And he put up a statue of Zeus on the altar. This, by the way, is why we sang during our songs, we sang that song, Rock of Ages, or in Hebrew, Ma'osor. And that line, Hanukat Hamizbeach. Hear the word Hanukkah in that? Hanukat Hamizbeach. And they came to dedicate Mizbeach, the altar. Mizbeach is the altar. Why did they need to rededicate the altar? Because a statue of Zeus had been put on the altar. And add insult to injury, the story goes that this guy also sacrificed a pig on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem. First of all, this guy shouldn't have been making any sacrifices. He wasn't someone allowed to do that. But by golly, it sure seemed like he knew what sacrifices would really get under the skin. You know, he knew that a pig wasn't one of the sacrificial animals. And so just to be nasty, that's what he did. So against this wave of anti-Jewish observance, there was those who rose up. Don't you love the way that as Scripture says, when the enemy comes in, it says, like a flood, God will raise up a standard against it. Isn't that wonderful? And so here comes the flood against those that would seek to destroy faithfulness and loyalty to the Most High. They were collectively known as, we call them the Maccabees. The Maccabees. And so you're going to ask me, so what does the word Maccabee mean? It is related to the Aramaic word for a hammer. A hammer, whack on things with a hammer, you know. And I guess that's what Judah Maccabee and his brothers were doing. They were responding. So the Aramaic word for hammer sounds like Maccabee. But there's another tradition that I actually kind of like, and that is, if you actually have your siddur with you, turn to page 85. In the middle of page 85, there is a line that says, this is actually quoting from Exodus chapter 15. Moses and the children of Israel sang a song to you, and what did they sing? They sang, "Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods?" Do you guys remember the Hebrew for that? Do you want to sing that with me? Mi kamocha ba'elim Adonai. Get that? Mi kamocha ba'elim Adonai. Take the first letters of those four words, mi, second word, kamocha, third word, ba'elim, and then Adonai, and take the first letter of each of those four words, and it spells the word Maccabee. Maccabee is could also be viewed as an acronym of this phrase. When did this phrase come from? It came from Exodus 15, when the biggest, most wonderful event of salvation in the entire Bible, the greatest miracle that God had ever done, was the deliverance from the Red Sea. Who is like you, Lord, among the gods? And here those want people rise up to be faithful to the Most High, and they want to say the same thing. Who is like you, O Lord, among all these gods around us? You know, the God of stuff and the God of the Greek games, which, by the way, the Olympics were originally performed without swim trunks or spandex shorts for the bicyclists. Those that performed in the Olympics, did the kids leave the room? Well, they weren't wearing their shorts and T-shirts. And there were Jews doing this, and there were Jews that were ashamed of being circumcised, and they didn't want to be circumcised anymore. But the Maccabees rose up and said, who is like the Lord among all these other gods, these Greek gods, this Zeus? We want to be loyal to the Most High. And amazingly, they were. They remained loyal, and God gave them the military victory over the Syrian army. 3 years later, to the day, the temple was dedicated back to the Lord. The word for dedication in Hebrew, you know it, Hanukkah. Hanukkah means dedication. And so they dedicated the temple back to God. God had given them a tremendous victory in the miracles. So that is a somewhat short version of the details. Actually, their efforts continued on for another couple decades before they were finally able to fully overthrow the Syrian influence that was going on and establish themselves as an independent political entity. So I said that this actually has something to do with Yeshua. So part two. The first thing is, did you know that Yeshua, Jesus, observed Hanukkah? Well, first of all, it says so in the writings of the Good News. And second of all, it was a Jewish holiday, and this is what Jews do. And Yeshua was, and of course still is, Jewish. And so Yeshua observed Hanukkah. We see it in John chapter 10. It says, that Yeshua was walking in the temple, and it was winter time at Hanukkah. Did you know that Jerusalem can actually get snow in the winter? Even there in a desert, semi-desert country, Jerusalem is at 3,000 feet. That's really high. That is really high. That's like West Virginia high mountains. And so Jerusalem got snow. I wonder if there was snow in Jerusalem that year in the story in John chapter 10. And Yeshua was at an interesting place. It says that he was in the temple. You see, what the Maccabees had done about 200 years earlier was save faith in God. If the Maccabees hadn't have rose up, and if God had not given them the victory, the temple would have been destroyed. The temple would have never been used again for sacrifice. There would have been a cessation to Jewish identity if mothers and fathers had stopped training their children in the ways of the Most High, if Jewish boys had stopped being circumcised into the covenant of the Most High, if sacrifices had continued to be non-existent at the temple, it would have ended. That would have been the end. The end of Jewish history. But God in his faithfulness rose up a remnant that when the enemy comes in, God raises up like a flood, a standard against it. If there had been no Maccabees to stand up to Antiochus IV, there would have been no temple there for Yeshua to walk in. There would have been no sacrifices that would be able to be made on Yeshua's eighth day of life, according to Luke chapter 2. When Yeshua was 8 days old, he was circumcised, and his parents went and made the sacrifices. In fact, the book of Luke in the Gospels begins with a story in the temple about a priest named Zechariah who has a vision that his wife, his elderly wife, is going to have a miracle baby. So the book of Luke starts in the temple. The book of Luke ends with a story in the temple. Those disciples that encounter Yeshua on the road to Emmaus, they come back, they tell the rest of the disciples, and what do? They're joyous about the risen Messiah. He's alive. And so what do? They go to the temple to worship, and it says that they stay continually in the temple giving worship and honor and blessing and praise and sacrifice to the Lord. But if there had been no Maccabees, there would have been no temple for them to do that. If there had been no Maccabees, there would have been no generations of Jewish babies circumcised into the loyalty and faith to the Most High. So there would have been no circumcision for a young baby born to Miriam, a young boy named Yeshua. He couldn't have been circumcised because it would have been against the law to circumcise your babies. In fact, not only would Yeshua have never been circumcised, I don't think Yeshua would have ever been born, because there would be no identifiable Jewish people that carry the covenant responsibility of God to bear God's image in the earth. There would have been no people to represent God, because then the whole earth would just be pagans. So there would be no people for Yeshua to be born to. So Yeshua wouldn't have been born. This is why it's relevant for us. Even if you are not Jewish, even if you're a Christian, Hanukkah is relevant to you, because without Hanukkah, there would be no temple, no Messiah, no Messiah's life, no Messiah's teaching, because his teachings are basically, he's teaching the Torah. There would be no Torah because it was banned. Everything was banned. There would have been no place for Yeshua to be born. Without Hanukkah, there would have been no Christmas. Christmas would not exist if it was not for Hanukkah. So people will sometimes say, you know, well, is Hanukkah just a Jewish version of Christmas? And the answer is, well, no. And, you know, we're in the habit of saying, you know, they're different. You know, they just happen to fall in December. Except I think next year Hanukkah starts in November. I know this Jewish thing's crazy. We can't get our schedule, our calendar straight. But the December holidays start in November. But actually, the truth is, Hanukkah and Christmas are related, because they're both about the miracles that God does and God's faithfulness and people that remain faithful to God. When the enemy comes in, like a flood, God raises up a standard against the enemy. So Yeshua is connected. Yeshua is embedded within the story of Hanukkah. In fact, in your Bible, in that passage in John chapters 10, it doesn't, probably most of your versions, it doesn't say Hanukkah. It probably calls it, it was the Feast of Dedication. Check out your Bible at home, pull it off the shelf. It probably says the Feast of Dedication, and maybe you've just read over that. But now you know what the word dedication in Hebrew is. So you can scratch out that word and in the margin write Hanukkah. Except then you'll have to decide how to spell Hanukkah. So that's a joke, because, you know, who knows how to spell it? Because it, to transliterate it into English, it's a joke. You can do it with a C or an H or a CH. But anyway. Finally, third thing. We've seen the story of Hanukkah, a story of loyalty to God. We've seen how that this really is significant and important, in fact, essential for our trust in Yeshua, the Jewish Messiah, whether you're a Jew that follows the Jewish Messiah or if you're a Christian that follows the Jewish Messiah. This is important. And finally, I want to look at a passage that we don't often connect in our minds with Hanukkah, but I think it is. Hebrews chapter 11. The chapter of Hebrews 11 is actually a beautiful sermon that a teacher uses to encourage people to stay loyal to God. It's all based on just the verses right before it, which say this, beginning in verse 35 of chapter 10. Therefore, do not lose your boldness. It starts out with therefore. Of course, when you see therefore in the Bible, you need to find out what it's there for. We'll skip that. I'll let you explore that. Verse 35 says, therefore, do not lose your boldness, which has great reward. For you need perseverance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. Verse 39, but we are not among the timid ones on the path to destruction, but among the faithful ones on the path to the preservation of the soul. Karen in her liturgy talked about the word highway in Isaiah 35. In that case, it's the big road. It's the way of life. And the teacher here is saying, we're not the timid ones on the highway to destruction, the highway to hell, but we are among the faithful ones on the path to preservation, to restoration. And so, as a way of example, then the teacher goes into listing bunches of people in Jewish history who had been faithful to God even when the path didn't seem clear. Every case, it was someone that didn't know exactly where they were going or what they were going to do, but they were loyal. Like the Maccabees. They were loyal to God. At the end of that chapter, start in verse 34 of Hebrews 11. He says, all of these people and a bunch of others did amazing things. Verse 34, they quenched the power of fire and they escaped the edge of the sword. And they were made strong in their weakness. And they became mighty in battle and caused foreign armies to flee. Women received their dead raised back to life. Others were tortured, not accepting release so that they may obtain a better resurrection. Others experienced the trial of mocking, of being a joke, and scourging, and yes, even chains in prison. They were stoned. They were murdered with the sword. They went around wearing sheepskins and goatskins. They were destitute, afflicted, and mistreated. But the world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and caves. And all of these were commended for their faith, although they did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us. I love the way Bible will do that. You think it's talking about one thing. It says, they did not receive what was promised because God had something better for, not them, had something better for us. That's great preaching technique, by the way. I think that some of the things here can be described that happened to the prophets back in Isaiah and Jeremiah. According to tradition, both Isaiah and Jeremiah were assassinated, were killed because of their loyalty to God. But I think that there's some hints, some pretty big hints, that what the writer, the speaker of Hebrews is talking about here is actually the Hanukkah story, the Maccabees. Let me tell you, there's a number of stories. Let me tell you one of them due to time. And if you want more stories, we can talk later. There's a story about a woman who had seven sons. We don't know her name, but like good tradition always comes along and provides names. According to Jewish tradition, her name was Miriam. According to other traditions, including Christian traditions, her name was Salomina, like a feminine version of the name Solomon, or Hannah. In any case, in the original story, she's not named. And neither are her sons, but traditions come up with names for them too. And they are approached by these nasty people, these pagan armies that have come in to set up a statue of Zeus and to do away with loyalty and traditions to God. They have outlawed the reading of the Torah. They have burned Torah scrolls. They have made Judaism illegal. And they come to the mother and her sons, and starting with the oldest son, it says that they bring him forward to sport with him, to mock him. We actually had that same word there in Hebrews 11. Some were mocked and tortured. And that's what happened to that oldest son. When they said, all you have to do is recant and do this to prove that you are no longer going to be loyal to God. You're going to now be loyal to the pagan gods. Here's what he said. You accursed wretch. I love this poetic reading. You dismiss us from life. In other words, you're going to kill us. But the King of the universe will raise us up for an everlasting renewal of life. Because we are dying for his instruction. And so he died. They bring the next boy, his brother. And it says, by the way, they tried to make fun of in sport with him too. They're mocking and laughing and sneering and they make him the same offer, and he says, you know what? I got these hands from heaven. And from him, I hope to get them again in the world, in the life to come. Because I'm loyal to God. And another one of the sons said, I will have to choose to die at the hands of men, but I love this, I cherish the hope that God gives of being raised again by him. And then just to stick it to his persecutors, he said, but there won't be any resurrection for you. Probably the last thing he said. This story takes place during those years of persecution in the Hanukkah time. You know, we celebrate, we sing happy songs, we light candles, we eat fried food for Hanukkah. But it was a time of trial and testing. It is out of this time period that the belief in the resurrection of the dead really took hold in our Jewish tradition. There were seeds of it that go all the way back to the Torah, and we can talk about that in another context, how even Moses talks about the resurrection of the dead. But it hadn't been something that our people really took hold of, this idea that there's going to be a future restoration. There's going to be future resurrection. There is hope. Even in the midst of this horrible thing, there will be hope ahead. And we see how actually, if you know the stories of Messiah and his teachings and his miracles, you know that Messiah promises and offered the same thing. Hope, restoration. God's promises will come, even though sometimes we have to wait for them. Sometimes we have to wait for generations for them. But there is hope ahead. And it was during this season of Hanukkah that our people really took hold of that. So in Hebrews, when it says that they were willing to die because they believed in the resurrection, I think the writer there is talking about Hanukkah. When he talks about people being mocked and tortured to death, that English translation is even softens what the Greek really says. If you want to get on your favorite Bible website and look that up, it actually describes how they were tortured to death in the Greek. I think Hebrews 11 in these final verses are talking about the Maccabees and the people that stood with them to be loyal to God. In verse 34 of Hebrews 11, it says, and they had their weakness turned into strength, and they grew mighty in battle, and they put foreign armies to flight. Who could this be referring to except the Hanukkah story? It is interesting, though, that as far back as Jonathan, not Jonathan Maccabee, the brother of Judah Maccabee, but Jonathan ben Shaul, the son of King Saul, said this one time in 1 Samuel, nothing can hinder God from saving, whether he uses many or if he uses just a few. The battle is God's. And so that is what the story of Hanukkah means to me. How God can take just a few and do something marvelous and amazing. or he can use a group of people that you wouldn't suspect had the power and the ability or the knowledge or the strength, and they can accomplish mighty things. Of course, that's why God gives us his Spirit in our lives. The gifts of the Spirit are to equip us to serve him in ways that are like way beyond where we're at. And God can drop those into our lives just when he needs to. Nothing can hinder God, Jonathan Ben Shaul said. Nothing can hinder God. He can use a few or he can use a lot. And so, Hebrews chapter 10, where I started, verse 35 says, we're not among those that are timid in their boldness. We will remain loyal to God. We will remain steadfast in what he has commanded us. We will continue in the traditions of our families and our ancestors. We won't assimilate. We won't lose our loyalty, our obedience to God. That's what Hanukkah means to me. I pray that in this season of miracles, the miracle of Hanukkah, how such a small group could overthrow an entire army, how they would have the strength to do that, it was only through God. How the Christmas miracles of how God could finally bring the promised Jewish Messiah to bring further rescue and deliverance for our lives. It's a season of miracles. And so, be loyal. Be obedient. And hold on to God. Shabbat shalom.